Perfect. Okay. So, hello everyone. Today is Saturday, May 11th, 2019. My name is Jim Knox. Carol, who normally hosts the calls, is out of town on personal business, so you're stuck with B as your host for you. This is our contract trust conference call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We are not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. As we approach this RV currency reevaluation, it is more important than ever for us to be prepared for our exchange. So let's talk about contract trusts. Okay, good day, Judy. You about ready to get started? Let me see if I can get you unmuted here. I got to find you. There you are. Okay, Judy, you there?
Yes, sir. Ready? I'm all ready to get started.
All right. Well, let me get my thing in front of me, and we will do it. Okay. We've been talking to you about business trust and common law for the last several years. Today, we're going to change things up a bit. This trust that we use is based on the Massachusetts Business Trust. When looking it up in a law library, you'll find it in the B as in boy section, not the T section with all the rest of the trusts. It's a unique entity that is not a grantor trust, nor is it revocable. It's based on the law of contracts. We as Americans are guaranteed the right to contract by our Constitution. Most of us have heard that the RV will usher in a new era politically. Nassara and Jassara appear to be on the horizon, along with the resurgence of common law and the restoration of our republic. Most of the statutory laws in the trust may be changed to reflect that. Many laws will be phased out rapidly, and all contracts will be amended accordingly. Our contract trust is a common law trust and is not going anywhere. During the course of your research into the best asset protection vehicle for you and your hopes for revaluation of the dinar and other currencies, most of you heard about many statutory trusts, business trusts, LLCs, corporations, other statutory entities. The usage of term business trust is actually a misnomer in this case. There is no business and is more accurately described as a contract in trust form. The addition of the word business has led much confusion, especially among bankers. They say business, and they expect you to have a proper documentation from the state. Regardless of whatever information we may give them, their legal departments have become watchdogs to make sure no one is involved in any fraudulent activity. So given what we have learned, and what the banks are expecting of a business trust, my associates and I have decided to revert the term contract business trust organization. So we're not saying it's a business trust anymore. We're saying it's a contract trust organization. Exactly the same trust that we've been using for years. We decided to drop the word business. It does say business in the trust in certain areas. Be aware of that when you look at all of the definitions of the trust in the contract trust. But we don't put it in the title. We don't put it on the leading documents. The character of the trust organization is described in the contract declaration of trust as follows. It is expressly declared that this contract trust organization, also known as a common law trust organization, business trust, pure trust organization, contract trust organization, and or unincorporated business organization, or better known as UBO, is not a partnership, joint stock company, or any other form of association or statutory trust. It is a non-grantor, irrevocable, non-associated trust, which lacks the preponderance of corporate characteristics is hereby created by contract as a separate lawful entity. Now that we have that out of the way, let's discuss why we think the contract trust is the best vehicle to protect your assets, those you have now and those you hope to have very soon. Judy, are you ready to get going on this thing?
Yes, sir, I am. Let me ask you, Jim, what are the advantages of using the contract trust?
Well, there are obviously many advantages, but for most people, the single biggest feature is that you can become the trustee. Quite simply, there is no one between you and your money, and we've said that many, many times. The trust does not rely on any state laws or regulations for its power of authority. The trust organization is a contract in trust form. It derives its legality and lawfulness from the Constitution for the United States of America. Article 1, Section 10. which preserves and protects the unalienable rights of all Americans to enter into a contract. The trust owns its assets in fee simple, meaning 100% of its assets. That is managed by one or more trustees. The assets of the trust will never be subject to probate or inheritance, estate taxes, etc. The assets of the trust are protected from third-party creditors who may have an issue with you personally. Because not registered in any state, your privacy and anonymity are pretty much guaranteed.
So, Jim, what's involved in creating this contract trust?
Well, Judy, this trust is a contract, and since we can't contract with ourselves, we use a third party called a creator. The creator can be anyone you choose. Your adult child, your brother-in-law, a trusted coworker. The creator temporarily retakes title to your assets and exchanges them to the contract trust. This is all on paper. The creator doesn't need to know how much of anything you have you are exchanging into the trust. As this is an exchange, you need to get something back, right? The creator gives you $21 and 100 trust certificate units. I usually suggest that you give the creator the 21 ahead of time and take them out to lunch so they have not spending their own money. The $21 the $21 should be in the form of money, not currency, such as gold or silver. You can use silver certificates, which is a type of representative money issued between 1878 and 1964 in the United States as part of a circulation of paper currency. They were produced in response to silver agitation by citizens who were angered by the Fourth Coinage Act, which had effectively placed the United States on a gold standard. The certificates were initially redeemed for the face value of silver dollar coins and later for 1 year, June 24, 1967 to June 24, 1968, in raw silver bullion. But since 1968, they have been redeemed only in Federal Reserve notes and are thus obsolete, but still valid legal tender at their face value, thus are still an acceptable form of currency. In my opinion, using a silver certificate shows the intent to use money in a convenient form. The Seventh Amendment of the United States Constitution provides that the right to a trial by jury shall be preserved in civil assets, cases like property disputes when the amount in controversy exceeds $20. That's why we use $21. However, this does not guarantee the right to a jury trial in every case. Rather, it preserves the right to a jury for traditional jury issues, which are questions of fact, whereas judges decide matters of law. I don't think you'll have an issue with matters of law because it's already been to the Supreme Court. So it's going to be a matter of issues, questions of facts, rather. You can easily purchase silver certificates at any coin store. Price will vary on the condition of the bills. And I buy them whenever I can. When I have a few, I hoard them because I use them a lot.
Wow. So you can get a $21 silver certificate?
You can get a 20 and a 1. Four fives and a one, a ten, a five, a five and a one.
Okay, got it. All right. Great. Thanks, Jim.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to ask another question, but I didn't want to interrupt your train of thought.
Well, let me just say that the $21 in silver certificates is the most effective way to do this because you're going to keep them with the trust forever. So what's your next question?
Yeah. Does the creator have anything else to do with the trust other than create it?
The creator's last task is to appoint a first trustee. While he or she can appoint anyone they choose, the typical and most logical appointee for the trust is you, the original investor. Let's face it, if you were smart enough to buy all that currency, wouldn't you be the most logical choice? After the appointment of the first trustee, the creator exits the contract trust with absolutely no further responsibility, duties, authority or liability regarding the trust organization.
Okay. Can I be the only trustee, or can my spouse, if I have one, also be a trustee?
The trust can operate with a single trustee. In cases of a married couple, one spouse typically appoints the other as a co-trustee.
Okay. How do we take care of our children with a contract trust?
Most people choose one or more of their adult children to be the successor trustees. A successor trustee simply takes over the management of the contract trust when you and your co-trustee die or, for some reason, medical issue, whatever, cannot continue.
Okay. how can I be sure that the contract trust will stay in my family for future generations?
Well, many of us will be creating generational wealth with the RV. While you can't rule from the grave, you can specify it that all future trustees must be part of your bloodline to be proven by a DNA test, for instance. You could name your daughter as your successor trustee, and she can name her children, but not her husband. We can also add a spendthrift clause, so no future trustee, successor trustee, or a certificate holder shall have any right to alienate, encumber, or hypothecate any interest in the trust, thus further protecting it from possible future reckless behavior or management.
Okay. Jim, I've heard that using a trust can save me money on taxes. Does this apply to the contract trust as well?
Well, yes. Well, primarily the benefit of the contract trust is asset protection. It may save some money on taxes. Mm-hmm. We have all heard that this RV will most likely not be taxed at the federal level, but it may be taxed at the state level.
Okay. So I live in a state that has high state taxes. Is there any other way to avoid being taxed on the RV in my state?
Yeah. We suggest you domicile the trust in a state that does not levy a state tax. Corporations and LLCs have been using this particular method for years. I live in Oregon, but mine are based in Washington State. We recommend Wyoming, as there are a few, if any laws in Wyoming regarding this type of trust. A mailbox in Cheyenne or where's the other one we have? Evanston. Either one costs about $120 a year, and you must maintain that address to keep the trust protected from the state tax. You can think about these places. You can get up to 5 trusts per post box in some of these. While the privacy is of the utmost importance, any mailbox rental will provide a USPS form which requires your name and home address. I also suggest you send the trust a piece of registered mail to further verify the address of the trust.
Okay. So I've got a mailbox. What next?
Well, once you've completed a short application, I'll obtain an EIN for the trust, create the trust with your personal information. The trust you receive from my office is totally personalized for you, and every line that needs the signature is has your name on it and is flagged by sticky note to make it easier for you and the creator to navigate.
Okay, that sounds pretty straightforward, Jim. Doesn't sound complicated at all. Just a matter of, you know, just educating yourself by what you guys provide with the discs that you provide. So here's the big question that so many people ask me. How do I get money out of the trust?
Well, that's a great question and one that we often hear. There are several ways. As a trustee, you're entitled to a salary. While this is taxable to you, I think it's still a good idea. You can take as much or little as you determine you need. If you find you can make it on $10,000 a month, give yourself a raise. Now, if you are also entitled to share to take a share of the distribution, much like a stock dividend if you, the trustee, decide to make one. Again, that is taxable income to you. Let the trust pay for your business expenses. You'll have office expenses, professional assistance, as well as automobile expenses. If you're planning a trip, make it a business trip so you can write it off. Most of the expenses that you incur can be written off by the trust. Likewise with a golf or tennis membership. You need to expand your circle of potential business offers, right? Suppose you are thinking about buying property in Europe. Why not make it a working vacation? Talk to realtors, pick up business cards, etc. I'm sure you'll meet a lot of business contacts on the golf course, tennis course, then the marina, etc. Maybe the trust could contribute to the cost of those memberships. Well, I would try to write off the cost of everything. I wouldn't try to write off the cost of everything. This is certainly a good way to pay for those expenses. The trust can also pay for your insurance needs. You can also borrow money for the big ticket items like real estate and new cars. You must make payments, even if it's just a nominal amount for interest. How about a 10-year renewable balloon note at 2% interest? You must make the interest payments, or the IRS will consider it a gift.
Okay.
Another method is to have your first or your mother-lode trust create and fund additional trust to purchase that new house or fancy car. That way, the new trust owns the assets from day one. It's not a taxable event. You don't have to make payments.
So let's walk through that. I have a mother load, and I'm going to create another one for a new house. As a, you know, that's let's say a car. Let's say a $100,000 car. So the mother load trust funds the fancy car trust, let's call it, with $100,000, and then the trust buys the car. Is that what you're saying?
That's partially right. Actually, okay. You do that exactly that way, but you want to put more than $100,000 in there for a $100,000 car. You will have insurance. You'll have.
Okay. So you could put $150,000, and then you've got all the car expenses paid for as long as you have the car, essentially.
Pretty much that, exactly.
Okay.
So you want to put enough for the house. You do the same with the house, same with the cars,
okay.
The boat. You put enough to cover the expenses for, say, 5 or 6 years.
Okay, great. And then that the fancy car trust, simply, that's the only purpose of it. It's not like it's going to be a lot of work for you because it has one main transaction, buying the car, and then whatever the expenses are annually. So that's not going to create a lot of work for people to have all these additional trusts, correct?
No. You're going to be the trustee of each one of them, and then you just have to do the basics, which is, you know, have a meeting with yourself, me, myself, and I, the trustee.
Right.
You know, the Board of Trustees, and we do all the paperwork every year properly. It's a very nominal amount of effort.
Great. So if it's not taxed and I put all the money in the trust, will I be taxed when I take it out? Or how do I get the money out up front without paying taxes on it?
Well, again, I'm not a CPA or a tax planner. This is just my opinion on how we may be able to take advantage of this one-time tax break. I think most of us have issues that we need to address post-RV, whether it be outstanding debt, a new car, helping out friends or family. We don't want to
pay taxes.
Have to, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So at the exchange, how about this scenario? Mr. Banker, I now have X millions of dollars. I would like you to put $100,000 into my personal account. Here's my account number and my wiring instructions. I would like you to give me $7,500 cash when I leave, as well as a funded debit card attached to my personal account. I will need these wires to be sent, and here's a list of the cashier's checks that I need. I'll need a pass-through account for X dollars. I would like to put the balance into an account at your bank for ABC Trust to begin a long-term mutually beneficial relationship. Here's my paperwork. Again, the abstract and the EIN should be all that you need. This is obviously a pretty simple slide, but, you know, you kind of get the idea how this would work.
Right. Okay. Wow, this all sounds so logical to me, Jim. I'm concerned, though, that I'm going to be overwhelmed with the paperwork necessary to keep me out of trouble with the contract trust. Do you have any instructions about what I have to do?
Yeah. Each trust comes with several PDF files that explain the trust. They advise you how to operate it with the legal backup for all of it. We also have an extensive members-only website that all of our clients have access to. The biggest thing to remember with an asset protection plan is do not commingle the trust money with your money. That's a big no-no. You also need to write periodic minutes to reflect your actions and give your future successor trustees a history of what you've done with the trust.
Sounds like a lot of work. I don't. Maybe not, though, right?
Well, it's not. And I make it simple because I have a tablet. I have 7 tablets in the corner of my desk, and each one's labeled for one of my main trusts. And whenever I do something, I have that little tablet. I make a note in it, and then I formalize that note once a month or thereabouts with a minute that I put in the trust. So it probably takes me 10 minutes, 15 minutes per trust per month.
Right.
So it's really not a lot of work. So if you have a lot of projects, though, you wish to start, consider this, that after the RV, with newfound wealth, do you really think you'll be managing the money that your projects and yourself? I mean, you just can't do all that stuff. It's not possible. So the numbers this may bring are in far higher than most of us have ever dreamt about, right? We're going to have more money than we can ever think about spending. So if you're going to try and live the life of Riley, is just not going to happen. It's going to be a task managing your money. So you're going to have to hire somebody. You know? Right. Great wealth brings also great responsibility. I would suggest a competent trust management company to advise you. You'll probably want to hire your own personal manager or executive assistant, like I've done. In fact, she's coming over today at 2 o'clock, final interview. I would caution you to find a good headhunter that will vet good candidates, like I did. It is not a good idea to hire your grandson, sister, or best friend. Hire a reputable company to hire your personal manager or other employees. Make sure that your company is fully vets the candidates to include full background checks, to include previous employment, police record, you know, including fraud amongst other criminal activities. Previous marriages, worst case, they are harassed on the job by an ex or back child support. Military background and verify educational background to include delinquent student loans, full credit check. If any of you previously, those previously mentioned come up, they might be tempted to steal from you, blackmail you, or worse, help kidnap you. And that's a big concern that I have because I'm disabled. I can't run.
Right. So I relate to that.
Your personal manager is your liaison to the rest of the department heads for all your projects. And that's exactly what I have. I'm hiring a person right now that's going to be talking only to me and all of the project managers for all the projects that I'm going to have. And I'm just, I found somebody, I'm going to hire him. So you have another
question.
Sounds
awesome.
Yeah.
So, Jim, you've mentioned other trusts. How many do I need, and do I need them now?
Well, that's a good question, Judy. All you really need right now is some other trusts. You may have heard that we need separate accounts for whatever currency we exchange. The key word here is account. You can open multiple accounts under the same trust. I have 4 accounts under my master trust right now, but it's also running this part of my business. Further down the line, you will probably want additional trusts for your projects, your real estate, your vehicles, etc. You may also want our triple play, which includes a portable will, durable power of attorney, and a health care directive. So now I have a little thing here I want to read to you.
Okay.
I did some research last night. I think everybody's going to like this. The trust that we produced for you is a direct descendant of a case that was won against the government agency in 1983 in the Ninth Circuit. The government appealed the case to the Supreme Court. 3 justices reviewed the case, agreeing with the Ninth Circuit. Effectively, this trust has a pedigree that is unmatched. Further, this trust is solely owned and copyrighted by Indicator Information Institute, that being Jay and Carol, my business partners. So that is not what had been discussed before, but we want to bring that out. So,
awesome. Do you think we should break for some calls and see if anybody has any questions?
I think that's a great idea, since I don't know what I'm doing here anyway. So bear with me, folks. Okay, anybody have any questions? Let me unmute a few people here. So what do we have? How do they raise their hand here, Judy?
I don't know. I've never seen Phil's board.
It's my first time at it, folks. So I'm going to unmute everybody.
Jim?
Yes.
This is Sandy. I wanted to ask a little bit more about a pass-through account.
Sure.
I've researched it or tried to find it. I can't find anything on it on Wells Fargo about a pass-through account. Now, that's the bank I use. But I'm not sure exactly. Let me ask you this. If I had a pass-through account and I only have my mother trust and I open up a pass-through account, then I come to y'all to get the open a car from the house or whatever, then send money in the pass-through account into the new trust, or what is this pass-through account? What is the benefit of it?
Well, the pass-through account is simply the first trust that you're going to have. This one's, we call it the motherlode trust. It's the one that's going to take and receive all the currency. It's going to have many accounts for the currency. Now, we're being told we have to have an account for each currency. That's what it is. It's just simply your first trust. And then it can then fund other trusts as you create them or have them created for yourself. So that first trust, simply the first trust you, I mean, the pastor is your first trust. And then it can fund your car, your boat, your plane, your train, whatever it wants to fund. That's all it is. You won't see anything about it on the sites because it's, I mean, it's just how well it works.
They automatically they'll set me up a pass through account.
No, it's your first trust. The one that you get from us is going to be your pass.
Oh. Okay. So when I get the other trust and they need to be funded, will that create a taxable event by taking out of the mother load and transferring money into another trust? Will that create a taxable event?
As we understand it, no.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
All right. We have somebody here. Another says wireless caller. I have no idea who you are, but go ahead and speak.
Jim, can you hear me? Is it me? This is Gary in Phoenix.
Yep, that's you.
Okay. Question: If we're working with a manager in the bank when we first get our money in there, and he's going to be our contact, the Motherlode Trust, we're not going to have that. Online, we're going to have that completely offline, and it's going to be basically between me and that person and the bank for a contact. If that person leaves, what happens? Is that going to cause any kind of a problem?
No. Are you talking about the person at the bank or the person you're working with personally?
The person at the bank.
No, what they'll do is they'll hand it off to the next person they hired to replace that person. You probably should go in and meet the next person, because you want to make sure that person is someone you want to deal with.
Okay. And the next question along with that, I plan on exchanging through or redeeming through HSBC, and there's not an HSBC here in Phoenix, but I'm planning hopefully on moving to the Lake Tahoe area, and in that area there's not an HSBC either. However, there are some in Sacramento. Can I say that I'm living in Phoenix, but I'm going to be probably banking in Sacramento? Can I do something like that?
Well, yeah, that's what we're doing right now. There's an HSBC in Portland. I live in Salem, which is about 50 miles away, and it's up sixth floor. It's not a bank, per se. It's the wealth managing company. I've been up there and talked to them. And you can be anywhere. And when you exchange, as I understand it, the rumors are, nobody knows, that all the banks will be there and be represented. And you'll be finding HSBC offices all over the place. They're not going to be banks. They're going to be wealth managing offices.
Okay.
An internal bank, but it won't be a commercial bank or a public bank, as I understand it.
That's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. That was my question. Thank you.
All right, any other questions? See, I think I've unmuted everybody. There we go. Now you're on. Audrey? You got a question for Audrey? Okay, I'm going to have to mute everybody. You can start. I'm going to mute everybody. Yeah, you can hit, I think it's star 6 to unmute yourself. And go ahead.
Okay, star 6 is unmute. So you can hear me now, correct?
I can.
Okay, perfect. So I love your answers, and it sounds like a dialogue. And is there a transcript someplace that you're reading from, or it's just personal notes?
No, it's something I'm reading from that we wrote, because we get sidetracked so easy. It's kind of like that movie with cartoon movie with the house on the balloons and the dog squirrel. You know, I get sidetracked too easy, so I wrote everything down. I can ship it to you. It's not a big deal.
Well, I was just curious if it's on the website, you know, because the content is very useful, and I'd love to go over again, because the strategy and the logic and the way of thinking is something, you know, it's like a new suit of clothes or a new pair of shoes. You have to work into it, and it's like I'm all in game 4, and but yeah, I'd like to review it myself.
All of our conference calls are on IQD. IQDcalls.com. Every one of ours. In fact, this will be there this afternoon. But I can.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, of course, it's a lot easier to read, to at least than to process the time on the phone and listen.
All right. Well, let's do it this way. If you want it, just email me. I don't want to have your email address on the podcast or with the call. So just email me, security indicator information, and I'll send it to you.
Perfect.
Yeah, no problem. That goes for everybody. Anybody want a copy, email me. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, and I love the dialogue between the two of you and how that works. And it's a great frame for understanding how to use this. May I ask one question then and let you go? And that is the note-taking, you using tablets and you're taking notes, and those are like thoughts, and then you formally monthly set minutes. Is that what you do, is just kind of like record the minutes, or is declare your actions and then process the paperwork, and that is like pay or contract, or
yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Danny, that's exactly what I do. I formalize, I keep the notes, because when we just lost a good friend here recently, John Newell passed away unexpectedly, and I took over everything, and he kept pretty good notes. I finally found his notes, and so now as successor trustee, I understand where he was going with this. So it's kind of like a diary or a journal.
Uh-huh.
For the successor trustee to go through and see what you were doing. So that I make sure that stays with the trust. And then I formalize whatever I'm doing at the end of the month, sign the minute, and enter it in the binder that the trust is in, and that's all I do.
Excellent. Okay, so that binder has to be a bound or a loose leaf?
No, the trust comes in a three-ring binder. So
Your notes, your minutes.
Oh, no, my notes are in these little wire ring, what they call, I use a notebook by Carnet. It's 100 sheets, and it's college ruled, one subject, and
So it's not an electronic tablet like an iPad.
No, I keep a physical.
Okay, thank you.
Because the reason I do the physical is because the court will uphold your notes. This is important.
That's right.
I'm glad you brought this up. If you have a set of notes that go back, and then they can look at the notebook and say, okay, yeah, these notes have been written off and on for the last year or so, that's going to hold up in court. Anything on a computer, they can say, well, when did you create this, and can you prove it? No, I can't prove it. But with a notebook, you can.
Okay. So you have a notebook, and then you have a minutes book. Is that right? Two books?
Correct.
Okay.
So the minute book, well, actually it's not a minute book, it's the trust. And the minutes go in the book with the trust. You just keep adding minute after minute after minute at the back of the trust.
Oh, I see. Okay. So Okay.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about, the three-ring binder. And that's the three-ring binder is where the trust is at. And so formalize my thoughts into the form of a minute, print it, sign it, three-hole punch it, stick it in the binder.
Gotcha. So you do that electronically, your minutes.
Yeah.
Print them and bind them.
Right.
Okay. And that establishes legal credibility because it's printed in a three-ring, in a loose leaf binder, that's removable. Because I understand that the binding, maybe I'm just splitting hairs here, but it used to be it couldn't be removable, had to be bound, but I guess that's changed now.
Well, it's changed because it's a private document. The only time that's ever going to be seen if you get drug into court. Now, we've never had that happen yet. So
That's right. Because you have right to your personal property and papers.
That's right.
Constitutionally, yeah.
Right. So the only thing that you're going to do is with the minute and it's signed and the dated, that formalizes for the trust, for the contract. Remember, this is a contract in trust form.
Right.
Okay. So that formalizes that. And then my little binder, my little notepad, is my evidence if I have to go to court that, hey, I've been thinking about this. This is what we did. This is why we did it. It's more of a
background,
a diary, a journal.
Yeah. It gives you the background, the context, everything like that.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's wonderful. And can you, off the top of your head, define a contract just for us? Like, I think there's five things that you have to have to have a contract, a formal contract.
No, I can't.
As I recall, it's the parties, it's a date, it's a transaction, it's money, okay, and it's a performance by when.
But, and intent.
Intent, okay.
That's when you miss intent. You had four, that's the fifth, intent.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Right. You did better than I did.
I just picking bones here. But anyway, it was fun. Thank you very much.
You bet. Anybody else? Okay. Well, then let's finish this up. It's a beautiful day outside. Everybody wants to get out to have some fun, I'm sure.
Hello, Jim.
Hey, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Neil from New York. Got a question for you.
Yeah.
I've been listening to some other calls, and according to these calls, they're saying that irrevocable trust will not be accepted by the bank, that you have to have a grantor's revocable trust.
Yeah, I've heard
that. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I've heard that, and the only party that's really saying that is Shelton, that I know of.
That's
and I think he started saying that stuff because that's what he has. I have a copy of his trust. It's really not a trust. It's more of a will. And it's, you know, 65 pages long. Ours is.
Yeah, I know.
You know, so anyway, I'm not really buying that. If that's true, then why are we able to open up accounts with these trusts now? I opened up four this last week, two for me and two for a friend. We have accounts at Wells Fargo. They've never stopped. They've been doing this for years.
Was that with the revaluation?
No, I mean, we should be.
It's a regular bank account, right?
It's just a regular bank account. That's all they need.
Right.
I mean, they don't really care what the instrument is. Think about that for a second. They don't really care. They're not legal beings.
Yeah.
They have no interest in that. They should not even question you.
Yeah, I know. But what happens when you're sitting in front of the banker and the banker says, we can't accept this trust, you know, for SOL?
Well,
you're going to have to accept one of their so-called skeleton trusts.
Well, then you set up a skeleton trust and you roll it from there into your trust, the one you want. I don't see that going to be an issue because why would they say it has to be revocable? It's because they want to claw the money back? Think about that.
I have no idea. It's just,
right.
Just what I've been hearing, you know.
I know. I've heard it too, and I don't agree with it at all because I'm opening trust accounts all the time right now. And I've confronted that party, and they never could give me an answer.
Okay. Yeah, I was just getting concerned about it because I've been hearing it so much that, you know, I said, well, what the heck am I going to do? I'm sitting in front of a banker. Boom, you know?
If you think it through, here's my point on that. You're going to hand this banker a huge amount of money. Do you think he's not going to take that? You think that he's going to say, well, you can't do that because you don't have the instrument? Heck no. They're going to take and use whatever instrument you bring in there because they want that money. It's no liability to them.
Yeah, I thought about that too, yeah. Okay.
I just don't see the argument as having any value, especially from the person that started the argument. And I've asked, he says, you know, they got to be pre-approved. Well, I said, well, send me the information so I get mine pre-approved. He never has, never could, so.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's another point. He says that these trusts, the revocable trusts that are grantors' trusts, are supposedly already pre-approved by the banks, supposedly.
No. Yeah, I've asked to have that approval person contact me or give me the phone number to talk to that approval person. It doesn't exist.
Okay, all right. Okay, I just thought I'd give you a heads up on it and see what you thought about it.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. It's a good question.
Yeah. Okay, thanks very much.
You bet. Sandy, you got a question?
Yes, I had a question about the certificates that we have in the with our. And what do we do with the extra certificates? I mean, do we ever sign those?
Let me explain. So you get two certificates. They're 50 units each. So if it's just you as the trustee, you get both of them. If it's you and somebody else, then you each get one. If you're the investors, which is another trustee, the investors. Now, should something happen to one of the trustees, one of the investors, one of the originators, then that certificate becomes null and void. It goes back to the trust. And then the next certificate, certificate three, is issued to the successor trustee. So now they're taking the place of the original investor. That's how that works.
Okay.
So that would only be signed and filled in that situation.
Oh, okay. So who, at the time, say I'm the only trustee, and when I pass on, the successor trustee comes in, then who notarizes or who makes the execution of that certificate?
The successor trustee would then fill it in, put their name in there, sign it as the successor trustee. They can receive as successor trustee.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You bet, Sandy. James, you're up.
Yeah. I've been told by three different credit unions that they will not do an irrevocable trust account. Banks, I've had no problem with. It's just credit unions.
Well, yeah, I had the same issue with the credit union until I forced them to take it, and I have an account in a credit union. They did take the irrevocable trust. And it just comes right down to they're run by a board, and they get attorneys in there, and attorneys don't understand it. So you have to go through the process of educating the attorneys and send them the documentation. That's all it comes down to is they just don't know.
Yeah. I like credit unions. I don't know why. I like them better than banks, but state banks are better than federal, but...
I do, too. Credit unions are better because they are local. Money stays local.
Right. So. Okay, thank you.
You bet. Okay. Next question?
No, that's not.
Oh, no, okay.
Jim?
Yeah.
This is Dean.
Hey, Dean.
Should we consider changing our mother load trust to an interest-bearing account with no monthly statements?
I would not use an interest-bearing account because then the bank has some control of your money. They're taking your money to use it, and they'll give you interest for it. So now they're using your money. I don't trust them.
Okay.
I mean, I just don't trust them. I've had too many run-ins with Wells Fargo. I've been over 23 years, and at multiple times I've had to really get on their butt.
Okay, so just leave it as a non-interest-bearing account for safety.
Yep.
Dean, let me
amend that. That's subject to change if we get the quantum financial system type banking, whatever they're calling it, whatever the new banking system is. If it works, if it looks like it's going to be solid, then I would amend that and say, yeah, I could do it. But right now, no.
Okay, thank you. Another question. As far as putting personal stuff in it, like art, jewelry, tools, and so forth, do we just list it in the minutes?
You want to put it, you can list it that you add it by the minute, and you put it on Schedule A. You just add it as another, or Schedule B, either one. And you just add it as another asset to the trust.
Okay, but do we have to put it in Schedule A, or it can be in just the minutes?
It'd be best to be in the schedule also. You have to do a minute to bring it in, and then you're going to have to, because you have to buy it, but then you're going to move it in there, however you're going to do it. And then you need to add it to the schedule. Remember, this is a private document. Nobody's going to really see it. But you should put it there. So everybody, your successor trustees, knows what the property is. They don't have to go through all the minutes to try and figure out what is owned by this trust.
Okay. Good reasoning. Thank you, Jim.
You bet. Okay. Who wants to talk next?
John. Hey, Jim. Danny again. One question.
Yes. Okay.
What is your attitude, if you could just sample for us, when you walk in to your exchange, you're going to bring your a copy of your trust, or you're going to bring just the title page? But I mean, those are the tools you'll have, but what is your attitude when you're sitting across from the individual?
Well, I'm bringing everything. I don't think I'll have to show them everything, but just in case, I'm bringing everything. But I would probably only show them the abstract and the CP-575, which is from the IRS. And then if they need to see more, I would ask them, well, okay, why you need to see it? Are you an attorney? Are you trying to practice law? Are you making a determination? I would ask them questions. Why they need to see it. So
okay,
that's what I would do.
And then, of course, if they're going to give you and be stickly about it, you can always just have the walk-away power to get up and walk off. Or,
Or go to a different, you know, they're going to have every bank is going to be represented there. Remember, you're dealing with somebody that's just going to figure out what bank you want to work with, and then they're going to step aside and let that bank come over and sit down with you. In my opinion, that's how it's going to work. And then if you don't like that one, say, no, next, give me another different banker.
Because the power that I have is the money. I have the money.
They don't. They want it.
They won't.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Novoveski, you're up.
Yes, I already spoke.
Oh, okay. You're still in the queue, so I thought you wanted to say something new. It's fine.
Okay, sorry.
No problem. No problem. Anybody else have any questions?
I do.
Okay. Go for it.
When states that do have an income tax, when their requirement is that you have to pay a state income tax, you're obligated to pay a national sales tax. But as far as I know, trusts are not one of the four entities that are required to pay income tax, so then I wouldn't have to worry about it for state tax.
I would agree with that. I would say that if you harbor your trust, like I do, and it's another state that doesn't have state income tax, has a sales tax. I don't really live there. I don't spend a lot of money there, but I don't mind paying a little tax when I'm there. But, you know, the IRS is in the courts of rule that you have the ability and the right to set up your account to pay as least amount of taxes as possible. So you shouldn't have any problem with that.
All right, thank you.
Sandy, Dean, anyone of you guys question? Taylor or James, got a question?
I don't have any.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got a couple more things we want to cover, and then if we have any last-minute questions, I'll take them. So, post-RV. Well, our staff and I will be around for 6 months.
At least.
The company will be around for a long time. We're going to hire a team to come in and continue. So you don't have to worry about not being able to continue with these trusts and get support. The website will always be there. So it's about 10 minutes to 11. If we have any other questions, I'll take them. If not, then we'll wrap up a little bit early if you'd like. Get out of here. No questions? Well, then we're going to wrap this one up. Judy, you ready to wrap it up?
We look forward to hearing from you in 2 weeks.
All right. So, wait a minute. Bev, did you have a question? You just popped up here. Clark?
Yes, I did.
Okay, go ahead.
I have two of your trusts, and one is a real estate trust contract. And
just came back.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering if... when we exchange, if I should put it all in the mother load trust first and then transfer it over so many million over to the real estate trust.
Okay, hold a second. I got to see if I can get this. Hold on a second here. Okay. Everybody, I'm sorry about that, but there was a lot of background noise, so I muted you. You're going to have to unmute yourself to talk. I'm unmuting Bev. I'm unmuting Judy. And I'm unmuting Audrey. Okay, that's where we're at. Audrey, we got a real bad echo on here, so I'm going to mute you temporarily.
Can you hear me?
I hear Beth. Go ahead, Beth.
Yeah, okay. So I wondered if it would be better to fund the trust right off the bat, or whether to just put it in the mother load with different accounts and then transfer it over to the trust. What I'm really interested in is if I can, the houses are already in the trust. So what I'd like to do is sell the two houses I have. And I'm wondering if the trust will buy another home, and whether it would pay all the utilities, taxes, and whatnot. And I would stay, or my husband's very ill. I'm older, almost 80. And
God bless you.
Carol told me to go ahead and put a note in the minutes to the effect that I can stay here as long as I can, rather than take a wage out of the trust for running it, that we could stay here till the end. So that's what I was wondering, whether the trust is able to do that, Jim.
Sure, yeah. It's called a life estate. You can and you can exchange a life estate for managing the trust.
I see.
So you just put a note that in lieu of wages or, you know, expenses.
Right. I have done that.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Good way of doing it.
So it will look after us. Now, I was wondering also, my husband being so ill, we don't care for Medicare at all. I'm wondering if I go to the bank. I know they have group insurance there, and I will have quite a bit of money. And I'm wondering if they would do that as a benefit to have us put into their group insurance.
I'm sure they would. That's one of the things you can ask for, and that's something that has come up. So, yes, I would ask for everything, folks. Ask for the kitchen sink. Ask for everything and settle for what they'll give you.
All right. I do have Wells Fargo. I've been with them for 30 years. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
all right, my dear. Well, thank you very much for the information, Jim.
You bet.
Thank you.
Rob, you're up.
Yes. Jim, can you hear me?
Yep, perfectly.
Okay, great. Just your thoughts on how close we are to this RV, and I know you don't have a crystal ball, but where do you think we are?
I think we're so close that we can almost reach out with a tongue and lick it.
Oh,
I think we are. I think that you can see something very, very shortly. That's my personal opinion. I have no way of saying it other than I've just woke up this morning and I just felt like, this is interesting energy. It's like kind of like there's something out there. I can feel it happening. And I did get a couple of interesting things last night texted to me. And there is a, let me pull it up here on my phone. I'll tell you where it's at. There was a video that I got sent that I thought was very interesting. And I did watch some of it. And, oh boy, how can I explain this one? It's Dr. Sam Muggsy has got Kent and a few other people that we know personally on there. In fact, Kent's one of our clients. And this is Kent Dunn, that is. And so it's Sam Muggsy, Kent Dunn, and Drake Bailey on a YouTube. And so I'm going to give you the URL here. And I don't know if you'll be able to get it, but let's give it a shot. And, of course, it's https://YouTube.be. That's standard. Here is the... The thing you have to put it after that is a / capital Q, lowercase x, 7, w, lowercase w, capital J, capital Z, 8, lowercase t, uppercase s, 1, lowercase w. And it was very enlightening. They were talking about it happening next day or so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Day or so. That's why I said you could almost reach out with your tongue and lick it. It's that close.
Wow. Wow. So this Ramadan has nothing to really do with it.
No, it does. It never has.
It never has. Oh.
No, this is a banking issue, not a religious issue. And you know, right now, they say that this thing started Friday evening in Hong Kong. This is what they say. They told me it started Friday evening in Hong Kong. That was last night, and it takes 72 hours to get here. That's what you're going to hear on that video, and it's also getting it from many sources. I don't know, folks, if it's true or not. You know, I just don't know. But I'm feeling pretty good about it. I'll say that much.
Excellent.
Well,
fantastic. And if you and Carol go before us, you will inform us, right? I know I mentioned that before.
Yeah. Now, the plan is this. Carol goes first because she is the top dog of our little group.
Okay.
And she will call me right after she walks out and tell me what she can tell me without violating the NDA. And then I will get that out to everybody by email just as fast as I can.
Oh, fabulous.
And then we'll probably have a emergency 911 emergency conference call. You know, just let everybody know what we're here.
Yes.
You know? So if I send that out, it'll be a high priority email, and I'll send out 3 or 4 notices, you know, the same day to get everybody's attention that we're having a conference call.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be we may not record that one because it might be a little iffy. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to attend.
Yeah. Okay. The live event. Great. I had another question, but I was listening to you, and then I forgot it. Is there any when this does happen? Do we immediately need to schedule be one of the first ones in?
My opinion is this: you want to be one of the first ones that calls the 800 number and schedule yourself 6, 7, 8 days out is my opinion. That's my opinion. That's what I'm going to do.
Yes,
because I'm going to go to Reno.
Because you need to make the appointment, especially if you have Zoom. That's critical.
Yeah.
You've got to
call
the number and make an appointment. The appointment doesn't have to be today or tomorrow. It could be, like Jim says, a little few days out, but get that appointment made. Otherwise, you may not get to exchange your Zim.
Yeah, and that which should lock in your rate, too, because you made the appointment, and it should be you can tell them you want to lock in your rate. Ask them. See, we don't know what the phone call is going to be about. What I hear from my source is a robocall. You call, they'll ask you some questions, and depending on what your response is, then they'll automatically take you to a live operator because they're going to ask you, okay, what currencies do you have? And I think as soon as you say Zim, it's going to trigger, and they're going to send you to a live operator and get you situated someplace right away so you can get that taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hear. I don't know if it's true, but that's what I heard. It makes sense.
We're hearing that from multiple sources.
Yeah.
And how do we get the 800 numbers?
Well, I'm not sure where they're going to come from, but as soon as they come out, everybody on our group, everybody here will be getting an email. I mean, I'll send out a blast email right away.
Oh, okay.
And the moment I have it, I confirm that it's a real, but I'll make my call. I'll call the 800 number first, make sure it's a real 800 number, and then I'll put it out right away. So anything coming from security at Indicator Information, from this day forward, please pay attention to it because it might have some very vital information. That's my email address.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right?
Yes. Fabulous.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim.
You bet.
Finally getting a little excited here. It's been a long, long treacherous road here for most of us.
Yeah.
I got into this thing in 2009, so yeah, it's been a long time.
Wow, 2009. Yeah, okay. It's this roller coaster ride.
I know. Sometimes Carol gets mad at me. She says, I wish you never would have told me about this.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Why did you tell me 9 years ago? Why didn't you wait just before? That way we have to go all through all this.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, we have another popping up call, Extreme Grout. You want to make a statement? Question?
Great call. Really appreciate it. I was wondering if you could give that link again. I was trying to write down that link for that YouTube.
Yeah. Sure. Give me a second. Pull it back up. Actually, do I have it here? Just a second.
Jim, is it possible to shoot out a blast email with that link on it for the people on the call, or is that too much?
No. Well, it would take me a while to figure out who's on the call and do that. So let me just give it to him one more time.
Got it. Okay.
It's a, you have to use the https://youtu.be. That gets you into YouTube. And then it's /capital Q, lowercase x, number 7, lowercase w, capital J, capital Z, number 8, lowercase t as in Tom, uppercase s as in Sam, number 1, and lowercase w.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, Jim. That's on YouTube.
Yep. Anybody else got a question or a comment? Last chance.
Well,
going.
Jim?
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to mention to people that they could actually listen to the recording and, you know, get that information.
That's true. I forgot about that. I'm recording this.
Yeah, YouTube. So,
post it later today, so it'll be on iqdcalls.com.
Great.
All right.
Thanks,
well,
Jim.
After 11 o'clock, and I have appointments yet today, so I am going to, if there's nothing else anybody has to ask me, I'm going to go ahead and shut this call down. Last time, going, gone. Any questions?
You did a great job.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
All right. So, okay, I'm going to read this last part, and if I don't read it, Carol will thump me on the head. Okay, so I think about it wraps it up for today. In future calls, we would like to make some suggestions to you about your new, wonderful, wealthy life, things like personal security, asset usage, and management techniques. Like many of you, I have heard that we must have a trust when we exchange, so I urge you to be prepared. Typical turnaround time is less than a week, but I expect that to be considerably longer post-RV. Our business trusts are well priced at only $1,495 for a new client and $1,195 for additional trusts or family members. We also offer a 20% referral fee for any fully paid new trusts. My name is Jim Knox. You can email me at security@indicatorinformation.com. My phone number is 503-583-6791. I'm in Oregon. I will take calls from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. my time, Monday through Friday. I try to take the weekends to catch up on all my work and do these conference calls. So thank you, Judy, for helping me out. Thank you for
You're welcome, Jim, for attending
and the attention you gave me. And let's just hope that what I just said about the RV is true. So we're going to close with goodbye and go RV.
Thank you, Jimmy. Have a nice weekend.
You guys do the same.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks.